Let's talk about it.
Hello and welcome back to Thick Radio, the podcast where we talk about gaming, feedism, and everything in their orbit. I'm James.
And I'm Tim, so let's get into it. Today we're welcoming to the show for the first time, we've got Braxton.
Hello, how are you?
I am good. I am good.
Glad to hear it. Thank you so much for joining us. I know that it was a little while ago that we first started talking about having you on the program, so it's good that we're finally finding the time to bring you on and have our conversation today. So listen, let's get stuck into it. You and I had a little bit of a chat a while ago talking about something that you'd shared as a story on Instagram, and it was really fascinating to me. It was this concept around racialized dietary restrictions, which kind of surprised me, because obviously we're aware that race is a thing and it's a construct and it's all these things, but that there is a legitimacy to diet and especially certain foods, and especially when it comes to the gaining narrative. So I was hoping, maybe just to kind of kick things off, can you tell us a little bit about your thoughts, where that all comes from?
I'll try to give like an abridged version of it. Because I've had a really long history or experience with just diet in general. And I didn't really pay attention to diet really until I was active duty. I was active duty military. And that's when, you know, I really started paying attention to dieting and things like that. And then I had the opportunity to kind of assist and help with people that were administering physical fitness tests. And that kind of came me into some bias in health and testing and dietary guidelines, restrictions, things like that. And then fast forward, you know, once I kind of was settled and comfortable and kind of discovered the gaming community, I started to notice there was a pattern, like passive comments and passive posts and just ideas about diet. Wasn't a lot of direct conversation. There's more assumptions and expectations without regard and consideration for, you know, what a person of, you know, physical ability is. You know, and specifically with gaining, when you're mentioning certain foods or you're mentioning diets, you know, people expect you to intake to eat or to, you know, experience certain foods when you probably can't, whether it's spicy, whether it's dairy, whether it's, you know, you're vegan or, you know, you're gaining fat or you're gaining muscle. Everybody has certain dietary expectations and restrictions. And part of that I noticed was not necessarily a negative aspect on race or nationality. It just kind of coincides.
So it kind of sounds like to me that there's this conversation that needs to happen around, not to say race in terms of the typical aesthetic that we tend to have these types of conversations around, but actually around like health and diet as far as like your genetic makeup of race goes, which makes a lot of sense, right? Because when you look at, and we've referenced before, Fearing the Black Body by Sabrina Strings, you know, the traditional African body is actually a lot more shapely than the Eurocentric body, right? And of course, I'm sure this changes when you've got mixed race elements thrown in there and other racialized body types and things of that nature. But just for the sake of today's conversation, I think it's going to be maybe good to clarify on that point. You are a black man, correct?
I would say I'm both my parents are black, but there's more ethnic diversity on my mother's side.
Right.
Yeah, there's some Filipino mixed in there. There's some Native American mixed in there, but It was predominantly an Black American. I'm not sure if I have any African American or African heritage directly.
Right. And I think because what we ended up talking about was this, and it was a very fascinating topic of discussion about, and I think a lot of it comes down to dairy, like in terms of what can and can't be consumed. Statistics that I was really caught off guard by. And look, in fairness, I don't exactly go around like questioning to myself, like, I wonder what's the rate of lactose intolerance across different racialized identities. But the stats was actually really, really fascinating. So I think it works out. I think it was Dr. Milton Mills. Is the Associate Director of Preventative Medicine for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, and a co-author of their report on racial and ethnic bias in the US. And it suggests that between 70 to 75% of African Americans, 95 to 98% of all Asian Americans, 74 to 78% of all Native Americans, and 53 to 58% of all Hispanic Americans are lactose intolerant. Like, those are big numbers. That's, in every single instance, more than half of people have a lactose intolerance. And it's really interesting because we've had this conversation before when we talked about, like, oh, what are the most common meals, ingredients, gainer shakes, everything that we use to get fat? It's milk, cream, butter. Like, straight up, it's dairy as fuck. And so that actually raises, I think, a real question about accessibility to gaining for people with non-Caucasian bodies, right? And I think that, and again, to be clear, this is why we want to ask the question how people are ethnically in the chat, because this is going to make more sense for, like, when we talk about, like, what people can and can't do. So, I mean, to ask you here, like, what was your consumption of dairy like before that knowledge versus now?
Well, I want to say this first. I'm by no means, you know, an expert. I'm more of, you know, a passive investigator. You know, when I have questions about something, I try to get as much information about something as I can. So by no means is what I'm saying concrete, but from personal experience and chatting with others, a lot of people are have an easier time with dairy as kids. And at some point you kind of grow out of it because your body doesn't need that kind of vitamin intake. It doesn't need those nutrients. You know, by all means, we're the only species that drinks the milk of another species, for one. You know, and if you don't think about that, you don't, you know, if that never crosses your mind or you don't really consider it, you don't think it's odd. It was easier for me as a kid. And then, you know, I kind of grew up where I had access to a lot of different types of food. Just from the, like, I lived in a highly, or a neighborhood that had a lot of Asian families, like Vietnamese, Filipino, some Japanese, Black, White. And I've also lived, that was when I was in California, and I've also lived on the East Coast of North Carolina, in the South, and that food is completely different. You know, you have, you know, heavy meat, you have, you know, Southern cooking and soul food. And the dairy was always an added ingredient. It was never really, you know, I didn't really grab a tall glass of milk all the time. You know, you had milk with cereal, but, you know, that back in the day, you know, when milk was like your, was said to be your main source of calcium, you know, before anybody really broke it down, you know, if your body is used to taking it in, it typically isn't a problem. But if you have those gaps, those prolonged gaps, then you kind of start to feel that difference. Even when I was active duty, you know, I would go to the chow hall or cafeteria and I'd drink milk, you know, 4, 5, 6 glasses plus a day, and not really think of anything about it. But once I got out, for some reason, like, my body was just like, nope, you better stop. So I don't know, it's odd. I don't really know the direct science behind all that, but I've noticed, like I said, when you're younger it's easier, somewhere midlife, your body's starting to kind of reject or adjust to it. And then when you're older, it's really something you got to kind of pay attention to. And I've talked to all different types of people who have the same experience with it. So, but there's a lot of other facets to that.
I mean, a lot of it comes down to sugar. So like lactose is a sugar, like fructose is a sugar. And fructose is very easy for your body to break down. It absorbs straight through the lining of the stomach. It's the reason why, like, if you're diabetic and you've got low blood sugar, they want you to drink something like orange juice. But lactose is a complex sugar, and it's much harder for the body to break down and digest. And that only gets more difficult as you get older. You know, the older we get, the more our systems, they degrade. I mean, we are not perfect machines. We can't keep running at the same level forever. And so like, as you get older and as your organs get older, they have a harder time digesting that sugar. And that's what usually leads to all the GI upset, you know? So like those of us that are experiencing this, the older we get, like, yeah, we could drink 5 or 6 glasses of milk when we were younger. But if we do that now we're looking at bloating, gas, diarrhea, heartburn. Like, yeah, it kind of sucks because I was raised on cow's milk, and I was raised on the old PSAs that they used to put out, like, oh, drinking 3 glasses of milk a day is actually very good for you because it helps control your weight and all this other bullshit they were coming up with. In fact, when I was real young, they had the Milk Does a Body Good commercials, where it'd be some kid standing in front of a mirror, like complaining about, oh, I'm so wimpy and I'm so small and no one's ever going to like me. And then, you know, the reflection cuts to like this big beefy stud who's like, just drink your milk, kid. One day you're going to be like this. And it's like, it was all this bullshit that they hand fed you because the dairy farmers, you know, when doctors really began to break down like what foods are healthy for you and what aren't, there were some studies that were published that said, you know, dairy's actually not good for you because you're a human. You shouldn't be drinking the breast milk of a cow. And then the dairy industry suffered. People stopped buying milk. They stopped buying butter. They stopped buying sour cream.
A really interesting episode on Maintenance Phase where they talked about this situation with Oprah. And it's actually the story about how Oprah first came in touch with Dr. Phil. Right, because on one of her shows where she's talking, you know, as Oprah does about, you know, like, we've got this great big reveal going on, this great big thing that happens. And I forget, was it about apples? I think it was apples.
No, it was about mad cow disease.
Mad cow disease, that's right. And it was about burgers, it was about meat. Yeah. So basically, the whole story about how, like, there was mad cow that happened in England, but then stuff happened or didn't happen in America, and it was the typical shock jock thing that people forget that Oprah kind of coined this on TV.
Oh yeah, she was right? Totally she started that whole thing.
She was absolutely the person being like, so what you're saying is, and like very, very that, but did this about mad cow disease, which was about American beef, which was about the beef industry, and then the beef industry nearly died entirely. Like, so few people were buying meat. It was literally, like, rotting in landfills because they couldn't sell it. And then they had to take her to court for defamation, which was a whole thing. But, like, the whole history of, like, food and, like, the question of, like, things that are good for you and, like, subsidies by the government, which is exactly why corn syrup's in fucking everything, because they still get subsidy kickbacks, which happened at the turn of the century at the same time as daylight savings, because it was all about making sure that your farmers didn't go destitute. Like,
remember when they tried to take high fructose corn syrup out of everything? We're like, our grape juice has no high fructose corn syrup in it. And I'm like, yes, it does. We don't use cane sugar in the United States because it doesn't grow here.
But then,
I mean, there's a lot of, like I said, different facets to all of it. And it's crazy how complex and how deep the rabbit hole, so to speak, can go once you really start to read into it. Because, I mean, everything in the food industry and health industry is connected in some way. You know, when something gets worse in one place, it affects something else. When somebody speaks up about something, then sales on something else go down. When, you know, an influencer says, you know, go drink this, then all of a sudden everybody's looking for superfoods. I'm still trying, you know, to educate myself as best as I can, you know, food wise and just diet wise and just the whole industry. Because I've always been a foodie, so I've always been interested in food, from a culinary aspect and from a science aspect. But both of you guys are, you're right. You know, it's complex. It's really hard to just hit on one little spot without, you know, going off on a tangent or branching off into another area of it. And then when you start to get into, you know, US food versus food in, you know, Europe or food in Africa or food in Asia, you know, then it just spirals, gets crazy.
I've said it before and I'll say it again, but I'll make it quick. There are three food items that they will never stop doing this with: milk, eggs, coffee. Three products that make up a huge chunk of the market. And every single time someone comes out with a study of, oh, milk's bad for you, coffee's bad for you, eggs are bad for you, that makes the market suffer. So then those farmers, industries, whatever that's in control of it, have to then hire another doctor to come out and say the opposite. So it's this push me pull you kind of thing that's always going to go on with corporations, and doctors are not above reproach. They can be paid to say anything.
100%.
So
Yeah.
I think the big takeaway from this first initial part of the conversation is each and every one of us needs to be very aware of the food we put in our bodies. And we're not just talking health here, but the today's episode, we're talking about diet and race. So whatever race you are, it is going to be good for you to be conscious, because if you are non-Caucasian and you think to yourself, oh, I'm consuming all this dairy because this is what every gainer is telling me to consume, it might be worth you checking with your doctor to determine if there's a lactose intolerance, because based on the stats, baby, it's a high percentage that you probably do. And even if you don't, conversations around every other type of food, right? Because something else that Mills says, right, with regards to this conversation, because only about a third, 33 to 35% of Caucasian Americans are lactose intolerant, he argues that the combined focus on dairy products in our diets, along with that, you know, marketing drive and focus, feeds into systemic racism. What are your thoughts on that?
I could see where that comes from, and I, like I said, I'm still kind of trying to research on him, because I came across him like old, kind of old by the way, and watched his lecture, but there's definitely facts about that. I mean, it's very much true into consumerism, because they're with consumerism, they try to reach the masses. It's not. And they try to reach the masses first, and then they break it down into pieces that target certain groups. And with systemic racism, there's things built into the food industry that don't consider you as a person. And he's pointing out, not saying that the African American or Black community is the only one affected, but it's usually one of the ones that's most neglected, which makes it stand out when there's an effect. You know, like, you know, if milk, when milk used to sit at the top of the food pyramid, you know, nobody was saying, hey, you know, you're telling all these kids to go and drink milk and eat dairy as their only source of calcium. We have a very high level of digestive issue in the Black community. And I think, you know, genetically, it goes back, you know, thousands, hundreds and thousands of years where our diets have been affected, because of relocation, because of indentured servitude, and because of slavery, because of accessibility to food in America, whether that was due to Jim Crow and where you can and cannot go, where you can and cannot shop, where, you know, those economically affected areas who didn't have the expensive versions of those food and had those downgraded versions where not everything was pasteurized.
Something that has come to mind for me, even talking about this, and I think we've touched on this briefly before, but if you go to like the district where all the restaurants are in your city, right? Like, what cuisine is going to be the most expensive? It's usually like French,
Because they're more
Italian,
expensive.
Spanish, right?
Well, people have that expectation and assumption that the French cuisine, and again, word usage, and European cuisine, is top notch. The techniques are top notch. The food is top notch. The food responsibility, the taste, the flavor, because of its rural background, and that's in disregard to the high level of cuisine in other places all over the world,
Exactly. There's French cuisine, but you don't ever hear people talking about Thai cuisine. They talk about Thai food. They talk about African
Thai
food.
food,
They talk about all this. But similarly, you don't hear about like lowbrow, quote unquote, French food. It's like everything is apparently swimming in butter and made by like 17 gourmet chefs with poncy accents and curly, twizzly moustaches. Like, it's interesting, even insofar as like not just the food that we eat because we buy it for ourselves, it's restaurant dining. And then you think about things like sickle cell anemia, right? Which, if you've not heard about this, is a disease that affects almost exclusively black people, which I'd never heard of. Because of obvious reasons, it doesn't affect me. But also, I didn't grow up in an only white community. I grew up in a very multicultural community. But also, why are we not then talking about this? Again, that kind of systemic situation, racism, that prioritizes this thing, but doesn't actually talk about something that really impacts non-white people. So, again, I think as part of this conversation, it's really good for people to be aware. And as you said, Brax, it's not about saying we're experts on this. This is, the final say on nothing. But it is about saying there is more to the story than just, oh, what we get handed to by people is the full story. And each and every one of us, and again, being aware of our racialized existence, what is our genetic makeup? Is there a chance that we could be privy to something or predisposed to something? We need to be conscientious of that, do the research, speak to the doctors, find out how that could apply to us as the individual, because bringing it back to gaining, that's how we're going to succeed and move forward. I mean, how many people out here are potentially struggling with weight gain because they're doing the exact same shit that every other Caucasian gainer is doing, but because of that intolerance, that shit's not sticking. And that is the answer that we've been looking for all along, and that could be very much the reason why certain people struggle.
I had a hard time at first kind of really joining the gay community because I kind of came out later in life. And I think I kind of had a bit of a bias, but I also had very clear, open eyes. And I was seeing things that I didn't really hear people talk about. And if it was talked about, I didn't know because I was very young to the community and I was very ignorant to it. And those things, when it comes to the gaming community, I started noticing the same patterns. Like, without trying to sound biased, but I mean, you see a lot more Caucasian and white gainers than you would see anyone else. And I would always say to myself, I would always see a black or brown gainer at first, kind of, oh, by the way, especially on older sites before Grommer, like bigger city. I mean, it's there, but nobody really points it out. And when you point it out, people think you're trying to point it out for the negative. Not necessarily. Just because you notice something doesn't mean it's automatically negative. It's just something that you notice. And then trying to directly reach out to these black and brown gainers, or wherever you stand in the community, whether it be an encourager or enabler, wherever you stand, I got very different opinions and very different experiences from everybody. And again, like, I had to change my verbiage to systemic exclusion, or just try to forego using systemic, to make people more comfortable to kind of talk about it. And you see, people's diets, and you're like, I can't do that. And then you ask them, like, hey, what do you usually eat? What do you usually drink? And who's to say that people aren't suffering behind the camera? Because even white, black, brown, purple, green, you could be eating something and you're making, you know, happy posts all day, but then after you just chug that gallon of milk, you turn the camera off and you're in the back, you know, yucking it up.
You could be drinking a glass full of Orbeez to achieve your dreams, and you could be suffering, bitch. Listen, we're not trying to read nobody here, and if you don't know the story, best you don't. Don't Google Gainers.
Yeah, I know the story.
No shade. But I think that's absolutely, and you know, it's so funny you mentioned, like, talking to people within that space, people who share the same skin color as you, people who share that same racial identity as you, and how even within that, there can be moments where you might feel a need to change language to be able to communicate more freely. And I think a lot of this just shows that there is a lot of that nervous energy that people feel when it comes to conversations around race, where people don't want to say or infer, people don't want to, you know, tread on to, but this is why we have to have this conversation, because we could be sitting here making an effort and saying, okay, a chunk of our community can't be doing these shakes. They can't be using these ingredients. They can't be eating these meals. And maybe instead of just going shrug, suffer, maybe we could say, hey, if we know that a lot of people aren't having a good time with this, maybe we should invest more time and effort into looking at alternatives. Maybe we should spend more time and effort looking into what everybody else is doing and celebrating and bringing that into the mix. I've got that brand online. I'm known as the Butter Queen, and I do love butter. Hilaire, clearly she's part of the blessed who aren't suffering, and I'm glad for it because obviously that benefits me. But I think if it could help other people, this is where, and I know we talked about this when we talked about a gainer's diet back in season one. I know we talked about this with diet conscious gaining. There needs to be more conversations between people about things that work that aren't just centered around the typical, like, dairy and sugar. Like, sometimes I don't want to actually eat sugar. Like, I love a sweet dessert. I don't need it so sweet and sugary that I feel my teeth rotten in my gums. Sometimes, like, a good cheese, but then, again, that conversation about dairy, right? Like, does it have to be cheese? Yeah. What about, like, if you want something sweet, what about a good fruit? Because you've got, like, and you know what, Tim? We were talking about this earlier. Banana chips, 3 ounces of banana chips is, like, 450 calories.
Which is something that is not advertised on its label or about any of those foods in general, because they want you to think, fruits and vegetables are 100% healthy, even if they're dried, even if they're whatever, like, they're not going to print on the label, yeah, by the way, there's a ton of calories in this handful of banana chips you're going to eat. And we assume that a block of cheese is going to contain 3 times the amount of calories that the dried fruit will. So that's what we're going to go for, because as gainers, we're going to go for the most calorie dense food, which is advertised to us as being all dairy based. Mm-hmm. Milk has a ton of calories. Cheese has a ton of calories. Butter, sour cream, heavy whipping cream. How many videos have you seen of people chugging heavy whipping cream? I have attempted it myself many times. The problem that I keep running into with it is that it has no flavor whatsoever. There is no taste to heavy cream, except this very filmy, milky, you feel it coating your tongue while you're drinking it. And that's not pleasant. Mm. And then immediately, if I do that, like, we're talking heartburn, bloating, gas, diarrhea, like, it's not going to be pretty for me. That's why I have it. I'm very like, I don't know. Can we please find some other alternative to this? Even when I eat ice cream, I experience this problem. Ice cream is one of my biggest weaknesses. I fucking love a pint of Ben & Jerry's, but God, do I suffer for eating it.
One of the best things about that, I will say, in regards to dairy, if you're going to consume dairy, is yogurt. Because the process of bacteria integrating with it means that it ends up being a lot less lactose heavy, like at least Greek yogurt is. That's my understanding. Mm-hmm. If I'm wrong on that, please correct me, because this is what my friend who's done the health sciences was telling me about, because she was all, oh, don't put milk with cereal, have like granola and Greek yogurt. And I was like, I don't know about that. And then she joked like, yeah, you know, as much as it's meant to be healthier, like the calories are way more. And I'm like, excuse me, que way? And then like a cup of fucking Greek yogurt with like the right amount of granola and like a squeeze of honey, bitch, that could be like 1,000 calories. Which is insane, But again, that's not just talking dairy, that's talking very natural honey, which very few people are allergic to statistically. And then also, we're talking about granola, we're talking about rolled oats, we're talking about things that aren't even highly overly processed, things that are designed in such a way that you're meant to just like be able to nosh on it, right? So like, there are things. There are
And I
things.
did try that. I did try the Greek yogurt and granola. Still got the heartburn. And this is so stupid, but like literally the only yogurt that does not give me problems is that stupid Activia, because it's designed to make you shit anyway. So
On, Jamie Lee Curtis.
Good old Activia.
I love it too, because one time she was doing an interview with someone and they're like, "Oh, we haven't seen you." And this was before like her little renaissance where now she's appearing in films again. Like during that break where she wasn't in anything, they're like, "What have you been up to?" She's like, "I sell yogurt that makes people shit."
A crazy thing is, I was thinking, I was listening to another episode, and you were doing interviews with bodybuilders, right? And muscle gainers. And something else, kind of going back to when I was active duty, I would always, we had to do physical fitness tests, right? And one of the things that we had to pass was a waist measurement with waist tape. And they would wrap the tape around your waist, and you had certain measurements you had to be within the pad. And the crazy thing is, you would see a lot of women and a lot of bodybuilders, bulkier guys, fail this test. And you're like, how are you failing with waist tape, but you're super fit? And then you don't consider that some women have wider hips. You don't consider that some bodybuilders, they may be fit, but they don't, but their waist still doesn't fit within the measurements. And then, that takes you to, just because you're overweight according to the number doesn't mean you're unhealthy. Just because you are, from the outside, from the exterior, you look physically fit, that doesn't mean you're healthy as well. And then when you consider diets, you go, okay, well, I see bodybuilders have those cheat days, right? And then, but then you're like, okay, when you see a bodybuilder that's bulking and trying to gain mass, they're eating 5,000 calories a day. And then when you look at what they're eating, they're not eating a bunch of junk food. They're eating chicken breast, brown rice. They're drinking, a lot of water. The bread is still included. There is a science to it. There's a balance to it, but you don't have to make yourself hurt in order to gain weight, whether you're trying to gain fat or you're trying to gain muscle.
Baby,
And
say
people don't consider that. And a lot of people, when they come at you, especially when you talk to some encouragers, or you talk to enablers, or you talk to admirers, they have this assumption that they have to be very archaic with their approach on forcing a type of food, or a certain method to you gaining weight, instead of having a conversation about who you are, what you are, what you like to eat, how does it affect you, things like that. Those allowances and those considerations, that conversation is very far in between with a lot of people, because there's a lot of just, everybody just jumps on each other and they don't treat each other as people. Again, that's just a general statement, not attacking anybody, but there's a lot of that goes on. And going back to bodybuilders and dairy, you can get more protein from plants than you can get from a lot of things. And going back to that, the doctor, Dr. Mills, he's an advocate for plant-based diets. Not saying you have to be a vegan or a vegetarian, but there's a lot of very high protein foods that are plant-based. And what happens to protein when you don't use it?
You know, it's interesting because, again, it's a little like when people say you have to drink milk in order to get calcium, as if we wouldn't get it from anywhere else. But most minerals exist in every single food. In order for things to be alive, they have to contain some amount of like iron, calcium, and vitamins and bullshit.
Broccoli is very, very, very high in calcium.
But nobody talks about it. And it's also like, I get the joke, like, kids don't like broccoli. And I know we're not talking good things about dairy necessarily today, but like, baby, put that shit in cheese sauce. You will not notice a difference. Like, It's just all part of that thing of, I think sometimes we resign ourselves to this idea of, well, this is the rhetoric that everyone says, so I guess this is it. I have no other choices. I must simply subscribe or check out. But actually, everybody is different. Foods contain so much more than what we give them credit for. Like, you know that whole thing about like the acai berry and all this other counterfeit, like kale, and they call them superfoods? Bitch, they're not super. There's nothing different about them. They just happen to be very high in whatever vitamin or mineral people have discovered that we're not
Or
getting.
fiber. That's another thing that people never consider is the amount of fiber that they should be eating, and that like a lot of digestive issues are related to the fact that we don't eat fiber.
Oh, 100. So listen, I think there's so much to that point, and yeah, I just want to zero in something you said before. It's like this journey does not need to be painful, and I could not agree more. I feel like I say this to so many people. Like, I do not force myself to eat bad food. I get the gainer vibe, let's go to the buffet, but bitch, if that buffet does not do good food, period, I'm not going. Because I ain't paying $16, $20 to eat shit on my plate. I'd rather spend $16, $20 to have McDonald's, if that's what that's gonna be. Because McDonald's is shit, but at least I know it's shit and it's gonna be lukewarm and ready to go. But then I want good food. Whatever, like my fantasy was never, oh, I want to be fat, I want to be Homer Simpson, you know, being offered a garbage bag full of popcorn in a side alley. Like, nah, bitch, I want to be sat at the table with a sumptuous feast where every bite that goes into my mouth is delicious and tasty. And if it makes me fatter, fabulous. But you know what? It's all about that experience of food. Like, the tongue is dedicated purely to what we put in our mouth, one of five senses we use to experience everything we can consider in this universe. Why would you waste your time with food that tastes like shit? Thank you for coming to my TED talk.
Yeah.
Sorry,
I
Tim.
was gonna, well, I was just gonna, I mean, this isn't really on topic of what you were just saying, but I was also thinking about sort of the insidious nature of the way that food culture is presented to. So, like, the example I was gonna bring up was I remember when the McDonald's Happy Meals radically changed, because when I was a kid, the Happy Meal was the burger, the fries, and a soda. Now it's burger, apple slices, and milk. You know, McDonald's allowed for, again, milk to become a mainstay of a child's diet. Like, you know, maybe they're not going out to McDonald's every single night, but like when they do and they get a kid's meal, they're getting a fucking dairy product. And, you know, if they're not a Caucasian kid, like say it's an Asian kid that gets the Happy Meal, that milk is probably the worst thing that they could be drinking because they're lactose intolerant. And like, but this is the nature of how this kind of stuff happens. Like, I'm sure that when McDonald's got the pressure about, oh, you're making all of our children unhealthy because you're pushing all this terrible food on them, I can guarantee you that someone within the dairy industry slipped in and was like, well, hey, how about you substitute that soda for a jug of milk?
Yeah,
Now
because
McDonald's is paying millions of dollars to the dairy industry to put milk in their fucking kids' meals. So.
why would the dairy industry care where they get their coin from? Because if they think to themselves, oh, McDonald's? You mean the bitches that people would pay through the nose to get their kids a Happy Meal if they're upset? The people who we could get so much money off of? Finding a way to weasel milk into that situation? Absolutely. Like, makes total
Same
perfect
thing with school lunches.
school lunches. I mean, and you know what? We also talked briefly on a different episode about food deserts and food oases, right? Food oases, where you have more access to actual retailer food. Food deserts, where the only food around you is junk food. The junk food, what is the mainstay drink? It's soda and milk. But in a food oases, what is that mainstay going to be? It's going to be Whole Foods. It's going to be places where you can buy expensive juices and cordials and flavored waters and diverse products from honestly every conceivable background you can think of at yanked up prices as well. So like there's also questions about that because food oases and food deserts very much tied to gerrymandering and tied to neighborhoods where people live, which is racialized, and we covered this in that episode as well. So, I mean, but it's exactly like you said, Brax. It's like there's so much to this. You can't talk about one thread. Like, you don't pull the thread and slowly but surely work through all. You pull one, the Hydra done come out. You know,
Well,
it's
the whole
like,
tapestry starts to unravel
and
because
you're like,
everything is just
you'd have to do a
connected.
whole season on this. And every episode would be a different facet of the same subject.
Absolutely. So once again, we're gonna remind y'all, this episode is us touching on what we can as much as we can, but please do your research after this. And
Tips of
again,
the iceberg.
tips of the iceberg. Find out according to your racialized body, like do you have a lactose intolerance? And not even just that, but like do you have an aversion to other things? Do you have celiac? Do you have intolerances?
Crohn's,
It's
celiac,
bones. Like
IBS,
I bitch, IBS.
diverticulitis.
Diverticulitis is a big one. Diverticulitis can kill you.
Yeah.
And a lot of digestive issues can lead, they start at the bottom and they can domino effect into bigger issues. And, people are out here that have colostomy bags due to digestive issues and intestinal issues and having portions of their stomach or intestines removed or diverticulitis and having parts of their small or large intestine removed. And it's kind of sad to say that, health is not pushed for the well-being of people. Health is pushed for consumerism and health is pushed to make money, not to make people feel better.
100%.
Welcome to
And when it is
capitalism,
pushed
baby.
to make people feel better, then there's always a problem. Like just like Dr. Mills got attacked and he had to go do a conference. I think he did one. He had a direct interview with Michelle Obama, I believe. And then he, I don't know if it was a direct address to Congress. But there was something on Capitol Hill where he had to do a presentation or a conference about what he was saying because he was being attacked for it, and he was fired from a job because of things that he was saying. It's kind of crazy because I've talked to doctors and I've been, pushed to the wayside, like, hey, stop eating dairy, and I'm like, well, hey, if I'm saying to you, like, hey, I want to look into it a little deeper. And then you kind of neglect me, then, that makes you think, well, why keep asking?
It's
Like I said, there's probably plenty of people that have issues in the gay community. They just don't say it. Because if you say it, you become a pariah.
We talked about this with Dr. Gaynor, a while back, the idea around health, and I was expressing to both, to you, Tim, as well as him, the frustration I think you find as the person who does not know the health but goes to the health practitioner for the health is much like what I was saying before. You don't get told things and then you think to yourself, oh, I've only got part of the picture and now I'm going to go act on it. You get told that minimal piece of information and then you think to yourself, well, this must be all there is to know because why would someone leave you in the dark on everything there is if it could affect me in a myriad of different ways? But that just ain't the fucking truth, right? So many of us go to our doctors expecting, oh, they tell us, the things that they tell us. Well, that's just the end of the story. And then people get real caught up when there's apparently more to the story. And then I think about, oh, who was the guy during the Middle Ages who was like, hey guys, the earth isn't flat and it's also not the center of the universe. And like literally,
Galileo.
and literally the fucking Pope was like, spend the rest of your life in prison because you're trying to tell us that the Bible's wrong and you're the devil because the earth is definitely flat and we're this most special thing in the universe. Like, go over that. You get, but this is how we've always been as people, I think. And I don't know if it's like a power struggle or what. I don't know because I don't know. But this is just so much bigger than people want to give it credit for. And look, I know we keep coming back to this point, talking about diet and race, but it's important. It's
I mean,
important.
that's the whole point.
That's the whole point. And look, even me, as the Caucasian person on the thing talking about it, right? Like, yeah, milk works well for me for now. Bitch, it's probably gonna get my ass one day. And what about other things that are lurking in the background that nobody talks about? Much like every other conversation about race, and people are like, oh, you make it all about one group of people. Well, actually, babe, racism affects all of us. It actually means everyone gets disadvantaged. Maybe not in the same ways, and maybe not to the same extent, but we've all actually got a chip in this, and we should be considerate of that. If not at the very least for ourselves, do you know what I mean? So like, I don't know. I think everybody listening, again, let's do some research. Let's look at this. Let's look at recipes that don't contain a lot of these typically, allergen heavy foods and drinks and whatnot. Do you know what? We talked about this, Tim. We want to do a cookbook. Want to do a cookbook?
Yeah.
And I'd love to design it. Like Nana's old fucking cookbook with like the fucking red and white lace doily print, fucking thick, heavy pages, super gloss, you're chucking through it. I'd love like still images done of like me and Tim in really bad Nana drag, like posing with the food. I think that'd be really, really camp.
What, like two fat old ladies?
Yes, I think that'd be very, very funny. Like massive tits in like one of those old like brooched up tops with rim glasses. I've still got the mustache and beard. None of that's changed. I think that would be very, very camp. But to kind of bring this around to more of that food thing. I know you mentioned before about Michelle Obama and things that she was trying to change, because it was the logic was based on more of like a diet based on what everyone could consume, right? And she called it like the food plate rather than the food
It was
pyramid.
a food plate instead of the pyramid, and they came for her. They came out of the woodwork. It went from, her being the first lady to how dare you black bee and all this, and you get black people in the White House, and then they change everything. Like, it just went off on these things where she was literally trying to keep in mind everyone. I'm pretty sure, yeah, she had consulted doctors and, the statistics about black and brown people being affected by lactose intolerance. But also, there's people of all backgrounds and colors that are affected by lactose intolerance. And then I know for a fact, for it to get to the point where they allow her to change such a very iconic, very recognized symbol in the food world like that. They had to come to some kind of consensus, to allow that to happen. And people have to realize that it doesn't. She didn't wake up and go, you know what? I like plates better than pyramids. She didn't. That's not how it happened. She didn't do that.
It's also a really handy visual guide because, Tim, you've expressed this before. People come to you and they say, oh, if you want to build muscle, you've got to get some kind of macrograms. You've got to get this, you've got to get that. And what is it you like to say about in
I
response?
don't know what the fuck a gram of chicken looks like. Tell me what it looks like.
Nope.
Is that a breast? Is that a strip? Is it a nugget? What is it? Like, give me a
So dumb.
visual fucking cue.
The awesome thing about this plate motif is that, bitch, it's a plate. Which means you're sat there looking at the meal in front of you and she's showing wedges. And so you don't need to know the number. You don't need to know the specifics. It's like how much of your plate is filled up with what? And so she breaks it down, And if you look at it, vegetables make up the biggest portion, right? And slightly smaller than that, you've actually got grains and protein in about equal measure, right? I would argue grains is maybe slightly more than protein. And then, the littlest of those wedges is fruit on the plate. And then on a side plate, she's showing dairy. And dairy is by far the smallest. And again, I'm not sure what these like fucking statistics and sizes are, but like if you think of, your main dinner plate where your food is, it's the side plate. And that side plate is all taken up by dairy, right? So like maybe that's more of the kind of meals that we should be looking at. Let's look at, what kind of vegetables actually have more to offer us calorie-wise. And we've talked about this. Avocado is a good one. Legumes, and listen, I know these ain't like vegetables, but they also ain't anything else that's on the thing, right? Like they don't come under that. So let's put them under veg. Avocado, the legumes we was talking about before, the side plate of dairy, you're not gonna have like a side plate full of milk or butter, right? So like work that side plate into the rest of the meal where it's like, okay, the cheese sauce that goes on top of the vegetables, if you're being funny about that, or put it as like a side thing of yogurt, which if you don't know what yogurt goes great with, bitch, look at a lot of Mediterranean and Greek recipes because it goes really great with that. Let's look at our grains and let's not just look at, typical wheat-based things with like bread or rice even. Let's look at quinoa, right? Let's look at plantain. Although I know plantain is probably more of like a vegetable, but like it's got a very like savory vibe to me. So I wait, is plantain a grain? No.
No, it's a fruit.
No, plantain is, I think it's a starch, but I think it's more in the, I hope I don't get scolded
Now,
for this. I think it's more in the potato family, the root
oh, I thought it
family.
was a fruit.
Like,
If it's potato,
I'm not sure. Is a plantain a
Because
fruit?
it's like a banana, isn't it? Isn't it like a small banana?
Yeah, it's more of a banana. So yeah. So
Fake.
let's just say it's a starch. We know it's a starch.
It's a fake. It's a fake banana, and it offended me because somebody tried to serve me a banana dish, but they filled it with plantain instead of banana, and I was like, "This is wrong. This goes against Jesus. This doesn't feel right." So I'm still out there. If someone wants to cook me some plantain and do it real good, I'm still keen to try this. But like, those are also ingredients that you never hear getting talked about when it comes to gainer meals or when it comes to like good food, right? So again, people listening, if you've got ideas for recipes that contain things that aren't like dairy centric, let us know. Let us know if you've got recipes that are meant to be like dietary inclusive, vegan, you know what I mean? Let us know substitutions for things. Like, oh, I used to make this always with bread, but it turns out I can't eat that no more. What would you recommend as like the best substitution for bread? Do you know what I mean? Like, let us know. Let's have more of that conversation, right? Oh my God. There's just so there's so much to talk about.
There's a lot to talk about, and it's hard to fit it in. There's a lot. There's a lot.
There's
I
so
mean,
much.
when you bring up race and diet, people go crazy, and then they look at you like you're crazy. And you're like, no, I'm just saying what nobody else wants to say.
And that's what we're doing today. We're having that conversation. But listen, I want to ask you here, is there an aspect about this that we haven't touched on yet that we need to touch on before we wrap things up for the day?
It's I don't know. I don't know. Maybe, like I said, I've tried to reach out to Black and Brown members of the community directly, and some people talk about, some people don't, and it's far in between. But I mean, I would say, just people have to be more conscientious about who they're talking to and who they want to engage with and how to engage with them. Not everybody engages the same, and a big part of that, a big part of the gay community, a big part of the gaming community, we all know there's this circle around race. There's these little, protons and electrons hovering around the nucleus of race that nobody messes with. And it's just, this is one of those things that sticks out that, like I said, I just noticed over time. And, I've caught the short end of the stick from a lot of people because of the color of my skin when it comes to gaining or just being in the gay community. You talk about it, you become a pariah, or people don't want to mess with you, or whichever way it goes, but you just got to be true to yourself and talk about it.
I think if you're a gainer that has been struggling to put on weight and like you can't quite figure out what foods work for you, just experiment as much as you can, do as much research as you can. I know it's very overwhelming. The research around food is exhaustive. You could spend months trying to figure it out, and you're still going to have a ton of questions at the end. I say do what's right for you. Like I'm starting to phase dairy out of my diet because every time I eat it, I suffer. And I don't want to suffer. I don't want to be uncomfortable. I don't want to be, racked with stomach cramps after I've eaten or chugged something that's supposed to be great for gaining, but like it's making my body feel like shit. So I'm trying to find different recipes or different types of food that I can incorporate that are still very calorie dense, but are not going to turn me into someone who is like in the bathroom constantly. And it seems like a lot of work, I know, but it's worth it because maybe once you do find those types of foods that don't put you in a lot of pain and yet are still high in calories, maybe you'll find you are starting to put on the weight. Like I'm very curious to see like maybe in 6 months of me trying to modify my diet, like what kind of progress I make after I've cut out dairy completely.
The thing I would want to close on here, and it piggybacks off that, Tim, is sometimes I feel like with gaining, we look to the mnemonics too quickly. We think calories in versus calories out, eat what the successful ones are doing, and everything's going to shake out the same. That's not the case. Bodies are different. Much like you were talking about with a modified diet, I've mentioned this before about my mental health. All right. When I started looking after my mental health, that's when my gains started to come on. And I'm that person who, I'm a stress starver. If my mental health is poor, my intake is poor, which means my weight's going to go down, or I'm not going to look bigger, I'm going to feel worse about myself. It's a cyclical thing. But also, that was something I had to learn. And unfortunately, I've only learned that in the latter half of my gaining journey. I spun my wheels for a long time because nobody wanted to have that conversation. And there could still be those elements where there's dietary restrictions, things I don't know about in myself because nobody told me because I haven't gone and checked with a doctor. You owe it to yourself to figure out, to the best of your abilities, what the right pathway is for you. Like, there's so many conversations about people who are like, I want to gain more healthily, I want to do this. Girl, we don't even have that talk. You know what I'm saying? It's like, so we are so in the dark about rhetoric that could really work for a lot of people because people just don't wanna. And again, I think if people are having success on what already exists, why would they challenge it? Why would people look for alternatives if they don't need an alternative? So I think it does come to us, like you were saying, Brax, like you were saying, Tim, being responsible for our journey. It doesn't have to be painful. It can be full of joy. And in my experience, looking after my mental health, prioritizing my wellness and my joy has resulted in the most effective gains. So maybe that is the trick, figuring out what is missing for us. And when we've got that, prioritizing it. And then if we've got space and capacity, yeah, let's look for other things. And for some of the listeners, you might be thinking, gosh, I don't know, with certain ingredients, maybe I live in a food desert. Maybe that's difficult. Maybe it's not that easy. It's part of the conversation. And the more we talk about it, the more we look for solutions for different people with different access needs, the more potential there's going to be that we can actually find some real success for many, many more of us than just the few. But I think we should leave it there. This is such a huge conversation, and honestly, I just want to keep talking, but I know that if we do this episode is gonna be like 12 hours long. It'll be like, nobody move! We're all sat here until it's all talked out. But no, this has honestly been such a joy to get to talk to you about Brax, because we've been kind of kinging this up for ages, and it's so nice to get this on. And listen, I haven't had the chance to talk about this yet, but listeners, we're gonna get to the socials in a moment. Brax is pretty cute. Go and give him a follow. Go and tell him that
Thank
Stan
you.
sent you. So with that said, Brax baby, where can our listeners find you online?
I'm on Grammar, on and off. My Grammar name, gaining for me, because that's what I do. I do it for me, no one else. I am on Instagram. What was my Instagram name? That's terrible. I can't even plug myself right now.
So it's also gaining for me.
There you go. Yep. That's where you can find me.
Fantastic. Well, listen, that brings us to the end of another wonderful week here on the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Please remember to like and subscribe, rate us 5 stars, and leave us a good review. Now, if you liked this episode, the podcast, or just us in general, share it with your friends and encourage them to tune in. You can find me on Instagram and Blue Sky at Stanham.
And you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and TikTok at Thicky Mouse. You can also look us up on Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok at Thick Radio, or at our website at www.podpage.com/thickradio. If you want to submit a voice note or become a financial supporter of the show, you can find the links in the show notes, and you can also write to us at thethickradio@gmail.com. So until next time, bye fats.
Bye, fats.
Bye, fats.
Let's talk about it.
Thick Radio is a Patreon and Anchor app podcast produced by Stan and Thicky Mouse.
Mixed and mastered by Stan.
Our artwork is provided by Lucky 2.
Our theme song is provided by Body by Train.